just a pleasure to welcome back Louis Nevalier, runs Nevalier & Associates, four leading stock advisory newsletters. Welcome back, Louis Nevalier.
It's good to be here.
Great to have you. And you know, you just put out an interesting news release this morning. U.S. shares are up 15% in just about six or so weeks. Solid performance. Tell us more.
Well, sure. The market's been reliquified, for lack of a better word. We started this year, the small caps have pretty much led the way. You know, we're in a strong dollar environment. We've had some big multinationals like a Caterpillar warn about the outlook going forward because, you know, half the S&P sales are outside of America. And when the dollar's strong, these multinationals are getting paid in eroding currencies. So there's a big push to be domestic. So that helps small, mid-cap. Obviously, there's domestic large-cap stocks. You know, Home Depot's pretty domestic. So are healthcare companies, things like that. So a big multinational like Boeing is actually pretty immune from the currencies because the planes are sold in dollars. So as are the energy companies. So, you know, it's been a very, very impressive rebound. We think the there was a glitch in the market in the fourth quarter, mostly related to ETFs, and they were being manipulated by our arbitragers, and then the spreads got wide, and there was a lot of problems with the ETFs in the fourth quarter. So we think it was just more of a trading glitch that hurt the market, and so we've rebounded.
You don't then buy into the theses that we were really bumping up against the potential for a trade war that spooked investors, as well as the slamming on the brakes of the rate hike cycle. It seemed to imply that the Fed was telegraphing, you know, the domestic economy and global economies not quite as solid as we thought. We're not going to risk higher rates against that type of economic environment.
First of all, that's a very good observation. When the Fed did raise rates in mid-December, market rates fell immediately and have been falling ever since. And the reason market rates are falling, the Fed has since acknowledged this, is capital flight around the world. There are five major reserve currencies in the world. One is the Chinese yuan, which purposely devalued its currency to offset the tariffs, and that, of course, creates inflation in their country. The second is Japan, which is low interest rates. The third is Britain, which is dealing with Brexit. And the fourth is the European Union. And they got a problem. They got the yellow vest protests. They've got Italy's now in a recession. Germany's got some issues. And then finally, the Brits are leaving the European Union. They don't want to pay them. So the euro is actually weaker than the British pound. So when you look at all the reserve currencies in the world, everybody says, I think I'm going to go invest in a country that has the strongest GDP growth, a little higher rates, and, of course, a strong leader, and that's America. So this capital flight from around the world basically has shoved market rates lower. It's going to continue. It's also caused deflation. You know, we are now the biggest energy producer in the world, and we're bigger than Saudi and Russia. And we got another 1.1 million barrels a day we're going to add to production. They're taking natural gas pipelines and putting the liners in them to convert them to crude oil. And so now we can tell countries like Venezuela, we don't want your oil anymore. So it's quite a fascinating environment we're in. I'm very, very excited about the outlook going forward. I deal with a lot of foreign investors.
The markets, as it translates economically, don't care for uncertainty. And when you have solid leadership, that eliminates at least one frequency, one band of uncertainty. All right, moving on. Some concern that we might see rate tightening cycle. That's what some of our latest guests here have pointed to. Plus, they're noting, Michael Pinto and others, Peter Schiff, that we could see a flattening or a continued flattening of the yield curve. How does this impact your models? Because I know that you manage bond funds.
Yeah, I have these tactical portfolios that go in and out of the market. You know, I'm invested in stocks now because I'm a stock picker, but I have a hard time with the broader indices and sectors. So in my sector ETFs, we're actually been out of the market since October, and we've been hiding in some treasury ETFs, 40% 1 to 3 year, and then 60% 7 to 10 year.
But look at what you've accomplished. I mean, the 1 to 3 year notes have skyrocketed.
Correct, because they got the the Fed would be raising rates, and they didn't realize that the international forces were shoving yields down. We are looking to actually cover those Treasury ETF bets, but not till maybe March 29th. We think it's going to be a disaster. We think it's going to cause more capital flight to America. We think we might get a downward spike in yields after, just like when Brexit was announced, it shoved the 10-year Treasury to 1.36. I don't expect anything like that, but we are looking to cover that bet in and around Brexit on March 29th. Of course, everybody wants to delay Brexit now. It's just it's a disaster for not only Britain, but the European Union. So it's funny, you know, the European Union wanted Britain to leave because Britain was going to pay them to leave. And so Prime Minister May, you know, meets in Brussels, goes back, meets with the House of Commons, and they say, we're not paying to leave. It's very dysfunctional how it's all working. All I can tell you is the U.S. is the winner.
You know, that dysfunction obviously translates into function for your short-term Treasury yield bets. Now, when you say bets, some of our guests, 60 to 90-day call on the SHY, which, of course, is, as you know, the short-term Treasury ETF. Is that the instrument you chose?
Yeah, SHY, and then for 40%, and then the other 60%, I believe, is an IEY. I have to check the symbol on that, but the... But yeah, IEY is not an ETF, but it's iShares 7 to 10 year. That's the one I'm in.
Again, hat tip for that call, because that matched Michael Pinto, who also uses an econometric model. I would like to get a feel for where Navalier & Associates sees this market on a forward basis. We saw the bears in unison. It was a chorus over, you know, that hiccup we had, or the chirp, over the last few months before this big bounce recovery. You know, the end was nigh. It's 2008 all over again. Oh no, it's the year 2000 bubble again. But there was a small cadre of folks who said, not so fast. Armstrong was one, Michael Pinto, and a few others, and of course yourself. Do you care to go on record, stick the neck out a little here on a forward basis, and give some guidance?
It's IEF is the Treasury we're hanging out. SHY and IEF, that's where we're hiding. And those will be covered around March 29th. But as far as stock market's going forward, it's going to get more narrow because the year-over-year comparisons are very difficult. So we have totally different leadership now than we had last year. It's led by energy. It's led by retail, followed by healthcare and medical, and then followed by cloud computing and cybersecurity. So as this year goes on, the year-over-year comparisons are going to get increasingly difficult. We expect the market's going to get more narrow, more fundamentally focused. It's very fundamentally focused now. There's just going to be fewer leaders. So I think stock picking is absolutely crucial now. We love dividend growth still. Stocks that raise their dividends and buy their stock back. If there's anything that's been surprising about the market, it's just the magnitude of the buybacks. Last year, we had over $800 billion buybacks announced. I don't have the final figure yet, but it looks like it could approach almost $1 trillion. So one reason earnings keep going up more than everybody expects is the market. My average stock will be gone 17 years. The S&P will be gone in 27 years.
You know, this is another good point that some of our other guests have brought up. You know, in the past, I don't know, wasn't it 20, 30 years ago, it was outlawed. Today, it's viewed as really just common practice. And whether or not this is sustainable against the backdrop of more costly rates. In other words, when you have essentially free money for bonds, right, to issue, you know, you can issue bonds at incredibly low rates on a longer, especially longer yield basis, then you have this wiggle room to buy back virtually as much of your shares as you'd like on the market, and that seems to give sort of an artificial boost to the price. I'd like just maybe a quick overview of what your thoughts are on this, please.
Well, the European Central Bank is still doing quantitative easing. That's the Bank of Japan. So they print money, and we have U.S. multinationals go all the way to Europe and sell their debt, and then they take that cheap debt, usually like Apple sell 7-year notes in Germany that 90 basis points, and then they'll take that cheap money and buy their stock back. There's nothing you can do to stop it. We've stopped our money printing in America some time ago, but other central banks continue to do that. Europe, Japan are out of bullets. They cannot raise rates because they're too old. You know, it's an aging society. So societies get older, the yields tend to stay low, and it really does undermine the central bank strength. while we still in America raise interest rates to squelch inflation and strengthen our dollar, other currencies just print money. That allows U.S. multinationals to basically continue to access cheap money and buy their stock back.
What might even be more interesting is the Navalier model. Now, this may be proprietary. It may not be something that you wish to address. I like to sort of pick the brains of our guests who have a quantitative background. Is there anything about the model? Because you mentioned we're hiding out in treasuries and whatnot. Is this a certain percentage of the overall funds, for example? Or did you just say, hey, we're out of equities. We're moving into something a little more safe. I don't like the volatility. I don't like the risk profile.
This is our ETF management. Our stock management's 95% invested, 96% invested right now. We're top ranked in ETF management. Last I looked, we were number one out of 460 in Morningstar Advisor in the last 3 years. But the our success in ETFs has been navigating the spreads. People don't realize that ETFs have spreads. And I'll just pick on SPY as an example. So last year, SPY, the biggest, most liquid ETF, went up 13.1% after market hours. But during market hours, it dropped 17.3%. So that's a over 30% performance dispersion. So the problem is if you sell an ETF on a down day, you're going to get picked off. And like if you sold on Christmas Eve, you would probably lost 4 to 6% below the net asset value of the stocks. So ETF spreads have become like the new EKG for the...
Ah, I see. It's like a mutual fund. You can almost pick it off. My goodness. Trades is what I'm saying.
But what it is, it's we've had flash crashes in the past, and the ETF spreads get wide. But then in the fourth quarter, we had a coronary. So we basically decide to not play with ETFs until the spreads tighten. And they are tightening. They're getting better.
In a way, I mean, that's valuable proprietary information, or is it more the tweaking of it and the management of it where the wealth is created?
Well, there's actually a pretty big conspiracy going on, if you don't mind me revealing on your show. Morningstar, when they discuss ETF spreads and discounts, premium, they call them premium discounts, does their math wrong. They do it at the end of the day close. And during market hours, it's just horrific. So Morningstar is misleading people. I had my own ETF with Oppenheimer. I shut it down in 2016 because the average premium was 137 to buy and 374 to sell. And you have those two together, that's 511. So if you answer me, a premium of 137 to buy, a discount of 374 to sell. So that 5.11% that it would cost to get in and out of my ETF, if you bought and sold my ETF every month in 2016, you'd lose 60% a year just in spreads. So Wall Street, in fact, they're having the ETF conference right now in Hollywood, Florida, at the Diplomat Hotel. Wall Street has invented something called no transaction pricing, where they say, oh, you can buy and sell ETFs and not pay a commission. Do you know what that means? That means we're going to fleece you on the spreads, okay? And people have absolutely no idea how bad the ETF spreads are, okay? And so when we sell our ETF management, we just go walk. We tell people that we know how to trade them better than everybody else. In fact, a lot of times we do a step-out trade, where we bypass the markets and go directly to the ETF firms to get better execution. You know, ETFs are like anything in life. Properly used, they're fine.
If I had come up with this thesis, I would certainly want to publish in some academic journals. Is that probably something at your career level? Because you've got at least one or two solid, you know, Harvard Business Journal level concepts here.
They're on Navalier.com. That's the management company's website. There's always a picture of Lake Tahoe there, so you know you're on the right side. In the lower right-hand corner, we have these white papers, and we've been warned about ETF spreads for some time, and we warned about the robo-advisors, the blind leading the blind. The SEC is starting to find the robo-advisors, mostly on suitability, just talking to machines instead of people, doing the wrong thing. And but we worry that as the machines take over Wall Street, they'll trip over themselves. And it's very disturbing. Now, our white papers are authored on ETFs, authored a lot by Jason Bonner. And Jason was a professional trader of ETFs at Cantor and Jefferies. And so he kind of knows the inside baseball more than most people. And but we have lots of graphs and charts, and we try to expose it. But what we find is we're up against a big... a big machine. You know, a lot of people don't want these little secrets out. Another example is when we got out of, most people don't realize that a lot of ETF firms pay a kickback to the firms. So I'll just tell you an example. My son-in-law works for a very big prestigious firm, and he gives all his portfolios away for free because they don't realize he's getting 0.5% kickback from the ETFs he's buying. Okay, so my son-in-law will never invest with me because I don't pay a kickback, but he uses big, well-known ETFs to do that. Other ETFs, especially the smart beta ETFs, often have just a lot of money to throw around. In fact, they're the ones that are buying space at firms like TD Ameritrade to basically push this no transaction ETF pricing. So when you buy the ETF at TD in the no transaction platform, the ETF firm's actually paying TD for it, paying for the order flow. So what's happened is when we got out of the market in October and hitting these treasury ETFs, you know, SHY and...
Can they find papers you've referred to directly?
The last one was called RoboSharks, causing the fourth quarter correction, but you can put that link up there. We had another thing about, are you being fleeced in ETFs? We like to pick on the pod ETFs. In fact, I just did the Orlando Money Show. I'm happy to report the pod ETFs disappeared this year, but they've been there in the years past. There's an ETF out there called MJ, Alternative Harvest. And in the past, people have had to pay up to a 30% premium to buy their pot stocks in this ETF. And so there's a joke on Wall Street, there's more money selling pot ETFs than there is pot because there's a 30% markup. So blockchain ETFs have been 15 to 18% markup from time to time. So what's happened is Wall Street is getting paid on the spread. People don't pay attention to the spreads. The ETF industry is like anything in life. They got legit ETFs. I mean, I'll be honest with you, like Spiders doesn't pay a kickback. That's State Street. Vanguard doesn't pay a kickback, okay? But then there are all the ETFs that pay the kickback, or there's the theme ETFs that have the big markups.
True, but those spreads, I mean, it's telegraphing Louis Navalier and Navalier and Associates some key information, wouldn't you agree? I mean, if it weren't for that under-the-table antics, it would be, you know, more difficult to decide what's happening. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. In fact, CNBC is reporting today. They're at the ETF conference, the race to zero, while ETFs are saving you money. That's all BS. And you know what's funny is they've taken an instrument which didn't normally have a spread, are shoving all their money through these things to get it. Now, one thing I should say about ETFs, spreads do tighten up at the end of the day. So if you look at them in the middle of the day, they're pretty wide. And then at the end of the day, they tighten up. So if somebody's buying and selling ETF, try to buy at or near the close. But see, a lot of these firms out there, especially the model managers, force their orders in the middle of the day when the spreads are wide. So that's the other conspiracy, okay, is that the firms are directing their orders on market only through these bad trading pipes just so they can pad everything. But the sectors are still mixed. And, you know, I gave you four or five of the top sectors this year. But different leadership this year. Your best defense, strong offense. Now you want to have very good sales and earnings in this decelerating environment. And you want to be more domestic.
All right. That's must-hear information. Thank you, Louis Navalier.
Thank you.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. Goldseek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. OneGold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. OneGold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals distributed ledger and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Thank you.